Hello, everyone. It's Bill Thompson, T-Bill, and welcome to Plain Market Talk, where I will provide a straightforward interpretation and analysis of current market news based on my background as a retired Wall Street stockbroker with almost 50 years of experience. And I will also provide business lessons to help you become much more successful with your personal finance, trading, and investments. So let's get started. Hey everyone, it's Bill Thompson, T-Bill. Welcome to Plain Market Talk. Today is Friday, March 31st, 2023. Okay, it's 9:58 in the morning Eastern Time. Let's take a look at what's going on with the markets. They're actually up, and the markets actually had a really good first quarter. It might be surprising, you know, with all the news with the banking sector and other things going on, inflation and so forth. But I'll give you those numbers here in just a second. Right now, the Dow Jones Industrial Average is up 0.51%. The S&P 500 up 0.45%. NASDAQ Composite up 0.50%. We had a key inflation report come out today, the Personal Consumption Expenditures Index, and that is what the Federal Reserve looks at. It was expected to be up 0.4% for the month of February, and it actually came in up 0.3%. So that does show inflation does seem to be coming down. So the markets like that. They also like the fact that the financial issues over in the banking sector seem to be stabilizing. A lot of banks banded together to try to increase liquidity and calm things down. See, it's in banks' best interest for each other bank to survive. I'll tell you why. Banks, more than probably any other industry, even competitors, do business with each other on a daily basis. You know, as an example, you have your money at one bank, but you have a credit card at another, or you make a payment to a to a grocery store, and that grocery store uses a different bank. The money goes back and forth. Banks, basically work together more than, I think, really, like I said, any other industry. And the problem with a banking crisis is that, as I've talked about before, banks primarily make their money by lending back out deposits. And if consumers get nervous about banks in general, they may begin withdrawing money from all banks. So it's in banks' best interest to basically help each other do well. Okay, so anyway, so we had that news. As far as the first quarter, which ends today, the Dow Jones Industrial Average was up just slightly, 0.6%. However, the Standard & Poor's 500 for the first 3 months of the year actually has been up, I believe the number is around 5%, over 5%. Let me get it for you right now. It is up 5.5%, at least as of last night. And the NASDAQ Composite, which has more technology stocks and tends to be more volatile, but that is up 14.8% for the quarter. Those are not annualized numbers. That is what they are actually up. So definitely been a good first quarter. Stock markets in general go up about 75% of the time. They go down 25% of the time. One thing, an analogy I was given years ago in my young days as a stockbroker that helps, you know, think about how stock markets tend to move over the long term. Here's basically how it works. In the short term, stocks tend to go up and down more for emotional and psychological reasons, which are not always rational. That's why the markets will be up on Monday, down Tuesday, up Wednesday. In the long term, though, it comes down to economic and financial fundamentals. Companies that grow their sales, keep their debt under control, and figure out how to make a profit tend to do well over time. But the analogy I was given was, think about somebody walking up the stairs of, say, the Empire State Building. So they're walking up the stairs, but they have a yo-yo that they're using go up and down. Now, the yo-yo is the day-to-day movements of the stock market. However, if you look at that, it's going up, down, up, down. But the person is climbing the stairs with that yo-yo. So regardless of the day-to-day movements, yo-yo going up and down, the overall movement is still up. So that tends to be how the markets work over time. Okay, so we had that news. All right, so what else do we have going on today? Virgin, the space company Virgin Orbit, they have announced that they are ceasing operations, at least for the foreseeable future. They've had a lot of issues. They've had some failed launches. I think they put a lot of emphasis on space tourism. That may or may not take off over time. The jury's still out on that. So anyway, the company ran into financial issues. They tried to secure funding. That did not happen, so they are ceasing operations. I think that's just showing a maturity now of the space industry as more companies are in on it. You know, getting these ships into space and into orbit's not as easy as it sounds. I mean, companies like SpaceX sometimes make it look easy. Even their landing of their boosters, the analogy I was given by a physicist, what goes into that, they said that would be like firing a pencil out of a cannon over the top of the Empire State Building and have it come down straight up on its eraser head. That's basically the physics involved. But anyway, in the space industry, I think what we're seeing now is a maturing of the industry. Some companies will do very well. Others will fall by the wayside. We saw that in the early days of the auto industry and many others. So there might be some opportunities to keep an eye on in the space industry. We'll look at that as time goes on. Okay, so continuing on, I'm also going to continue on with option contracts today. I think I'm going to do one more session on the call debit spreads that I covered on the last session. And then on the next session, I'm going to move over to call credit spreads. Then I'm going to go over to put spreads, maybe talk about some more esoteric spreads, butterfly spreads, and so forth. I also want to finish up with our sessions on options with what goes into the pricing of options, the various components. They're called deltas, gammas, betas, vegas, and so forth. So I will do that. Then I think I'm going to do a few sessions on bonds. You know, you hear about stocks and bonds. On upcoming sessions, I'll talk about mutual funds, trading strategies, opening brokerage accounts, just lots of things like that. I'm also going to be talking about on future sessions, actually futures contracts, talk about technical analysis, chart reading, day trading, just all kinds of stuff. So anyway, but we'll continue on with call debit spreads here in just a little bit. Okay, a few other things I wanted to mention. Today is the last day of the quarter, so what will happen now is we'll now move into earnings season. That'll probably start about 2 weeks from now. The banks will usually be the first companies to report. Their financials are a little bit more straightforward. And with all that's gone on with the banking sector, the market is going to take a good look at that as to, you know, how that affected their profit, just basically overall margin numbers. So we have that coming up earnings season. Okay, so we've got some other news here. I want to talk about stock analysts, a few comments on that before we move on. I just saw an article that one of the stock analysts over at Morgan Stanley downgraded Charles Schwab's stock for the first time in 7 years. Apparently, they've kept it as a buy recommendation for 7 years and just moved it back to a hold, basically saying the issues that he's seeing over at Schwab are a lot of money's being withdrawn from their low interest bearing accounts, moving over to other financial firms with higher interest. All right. But he said fundamentally the company's still strong. But here's the issue. He's kept a buy recommendation on this stock for the last 7 years. I mean, really? Let's take a look at what's actually happened with this stock. Well, this analyst, and I'm not saying this one particular analyst. Some of these stock analysts, just so you know, are really good. They really know their stuff. Others, we used to roll our eyes on Wall Street. See, we were stock traders, not analysts. And I'll tell you one thing about that. The New York Stock Exchange, some of those floor traders, I mean, they are the absolute best in the world, in just the whole financial world, at what they do. You know, I was lucky to learn from so many of them that just had so much more knowledge than me. You know how they got to be stock traders? They are the best at what they do. I bet in my day, I mean, as far as even their education, I had an MBA. I have an MBA, Master of Business Administration, but some of them actually had high school diplomas. And what they had done is they'd worked their way up over the decades from being floor runners. They used to run around with paper tickets, and they worked their way up. They were there because they were the absolute best at what they did. It's kind of like an NFL football team. Yeah, players that come from wealthy families, not so wealthy families, just that, you know, all parts of the country, they're on that field because they are the best at what they do. And that's how it was with the traders on the floor of the New York Stock Exchange and still is. As far as these stock analysts, though, what a lot of them did, they went to an Ivy League school. got a degree in finance, MBA, whatever, not a stock analyst. And some of them are really good. Others, it's like, wow, we used to just roll our eyes. Even some of their earnings estimates, we used to have our own number on the Florida Exchange called the whisper number. We would whisper to each other, and it wasn't public. And that's what, and we were usually a lot more accurate than these analysts. I remember one time, way back in the day, apparently three analysts somehow got a hold of our whisper numbers for some particular stock, and then they immediately changed their update to their earnings estimate. Well, yeah, they're using our numbers, but anyway. But yeah, you got to be careful with analysts. Some of them are reluctant to ever put anything less than a buy recommendation or hold recommendation on a stock. They rarely will do a sell recommendation. Part of the argument is that their firms may be looking to do business with that company in the future, issue new stock, bonds, and so forth, and they don't want to basically upset the relationship. That's like sometimes guitar magazines, you know, they're very reluctant to ever put a negative review on a guitar because that same company is probably buying advertising space from them. They're afraid they'll pull their advertising. Anyway, but yeah, you got to be careful with some of these analysts. Some of them are really good. Others, wow, just wow. Anyway, all right. So anyway, but yeah, this, as an example, apparently this analyst has had a buy recommendation for the last 7 years on Schwab stock. Okay, so let's just use that as an example. The trading symbols SCHW, Sam Charlie Henry Walter. Okay. So let's just look at what the stock has done for the last 5 years. Then I have a few other comments to make. We'll move on to option contracts. Okay. Let's see. Okay, I'm just going to go back 5 years. Okay, so back in, let's see, April 1st, 2018, stock, I'm just rounding off, around $56 a share. Okay, so they had a buy recommendation on it. The stock then declined to $33 a share by July 1st, 2020. So a little more than 2 years later. Well, they should have had a sell recommendation on it during that time period. Okay, and it, so from then, the stock went up to $73 a share by June 2021. All right, so the buy recommendation would have been good then. It then pulled back to $67 a share a month later. Okay, probably should have told people to sell at that point. But then went back up to $88 a share by beginning of 2022. Okay, so at this point, then the stock declined to $63 a share. So they should have had a sell recommendation on it then. But then it went from $63 up to $83 by last November. Okay, buy recommendation would have been good then, but now the stock's at $51 a share. Well, you know, maybe you should have told everybody to sell it at $83, and yet they've just had a buy recommendation on it this whole time. And I'm not picking on this one analyst. A lot of them do that. So just be careful, but I will tell you what analysts are good for. If you read the research reports, why are they stating their opinion? You know, buy, hold, whatever. Like I said, you rarely see sell, but, you know, and look at it. It may be some information you can use to make your own decision. You can also look at what other analysts think. So anyway, just wanted to mention that on stock analysts. Got to be a little bit careful there. All right, a couple more things here. We'll talk about options contracts. There's an article today on CNBC. Basically, it says here, Wall Street lines up against Securities and Exchange Commission Chair Gary Gensler on one of his most controversial proposals. All right, here's what the proposal is. And this is the last day for investment firms to make comments on it, apparently. It's an overhaul of the U.S. trading system, and the controversy involves payment for order flow. Now, I've talked about this in the past, but here's basically what it is. If you ever wonder why some brokerage firms can charge zero commissions on trades, believe me, in the financial industry, nobody's doing this for free. All right. So basically, here's what happens. Why are they able to charge zero commissions? All right, so here's what happens. Retail brokerage firms, where you'd have a brokerage account, most of them do not have their own people on the floor of the New York Stock Exchange or the electronic trading system, NASDAQ. They're called market makers there. They send the orders to the floor traders or to the market makers on NASDAQ. Another day I'll talk about specifically how the system works. All right. But what happens is these floor traders and NASDAQ market makers, they make money from the difference between the selling and buying price of a stock, bid and ask. Again, we'll talk about more of that another day. What they do is they pay, many of them pay the retail brokerage firms to send the orders to them. Send your business to us, we will pay you. And that's how these firms are then able to charge zero commissions. Okay. Well, that is highly controversial. The question is, on one side, investors are not paying commissions. That helps. On the other side, are they getting the best price? Or are they simply, the order's just being sent to whichever trader or market maker is offering the most money? So the proposal with the Securities Exchange Commission is to change that system to an auction system where market makers and brokerage firms will compete with each other and bid on the orders. They're saying this is so cumbersome and complex that they won't be able to do it. They're just going to end up just raising prices, spreading out the difference between the buying and selling price, and it will be a detriment to investors. So we'll see. My guess is there'll probably be a compromise, and the firms will learn to adjust to it. Just like back in my day, we used to have eighths of a dollar differences between the buying and selling price for a stock. You know, we'd have a bid of 50, selling price, asking price 50 and 1/8. That's 12 and a half cents. We used eighths of a dollar because when the New York Stock Exchange was founded in 1792, the original currency were Spanish pieces of eight. Well, we always knew from the buying and selling, we made 12 and a half cents profit. Then in April 2001, it was changed to dollars and cents. Well, the brokerage firm said it would put them out of business because the idea is the spreads, as they're called, might shrink to one or two pennies and 12 and a half cents. But you know what? It happened, and the brokerage firms figured out how to adapt to it. They'll be the same thing here. So, all right, so we got that. All right, so the last thing today, I just want to do a quick review of call debit spreads. And I think what the stock I'm going to use today is Apple. All right, so let's say you think Apple stock is going to go up, and you want to try to make some money from it. Now, you don't own Apple stock. However, it's $163 stock. But what you want to do is you want to try to make money from it going up. So what you could do is buy what are, you know, call option contracts. I've talked about those in the past. The idea of a call option contract, it gives you the right, but not the obligation, to buy 100 shares of the stock between now and when the contract expires. So let's take a look at some July option contracts. I used that same month last time. These contracts will expire, close of business Friday, July 21st, 2023. Okay, so I mentioned that the stock is sitting at, I think it was $163 a share. Let me go ahead and bring it up. All right, so what we want to do is we want to go to the, in this case, the website of the Chicago Board Options Exchange, cboe.com. I've talked about that before. Click on data up top and then quotes dashboard, middle of the next screen. Okay, Apple's trading symbol is AAPL. Okay, so let's type that in for Apple, AAPL. And right now the stock is, and then you want to click on options on the next screen, sorry. And yeah, it stock's about about $163 a share. Okay, so let's now look at July option contracts. We go to expiration over on the right, July. And then for size, click six. That gives you six options contracts for that month near the current price. All right, and click on view chain. All right, so here's how it works. Stock's around $163 a share right now. Let's say you want to buy option contracts with a 165 strike price. That would give you the ability to buy 100 shares of Apple stock between now and July 21st at $165 a share. Okay, that contract has no value at the moment because you could buy the stock at 163. Why pay 165? But you want that privilege in case it starts going up. So right now I'm looking at the asking price, 9.5. That's $9.50 per share. Most option contracts represent 100 shares. That contract would cost you $950. Okay, so let's look at this scenario. If the stock does not go above $165 a share between now and July, The contract would expire worthless and your maximum loss is $950. Now, what if you'd bought the stock itself? Well, 100 shares times $165 is $16,500. Theoretically, the stock could go to zero. That would be your maximum loss, $16,500 versus $950. Now, what would your profit potential be on this options contract? It's actually unlimited. The stock could go to whatever price. Let's say it went to $200 a share. Well, you have a contract that lets you buy it at $165. And what happens, the exchange just gives you the difference, $35 a share times 100 shares. You'd make $3,500 in this case on a $950 investment, you know, triple your money in basically, you know, 3 months or so. So that is 4 months, whatever it would be. So anyway, that's how this option contract would work. But let's say you think Apple's going to go up, but not that much. So instead of just buying the call options contracts, you decide to sell a call options contract at a higher price. Say a strike price of $180 a share. Now, the bid price on this, 3.2, somebody's willing to pay you times 100 shares, $320 for that privilege. So you paid $950 for the first contract, okay, minus the $320 you got back. So now your total cost is $630 versus $950, just two-thirds. So in this case, your maximum loss is $630 versus $950, but you've capped out your profits. Let's say the stock does go to $200 a share. Okay, you theoretically could buy it at $165, but somebody else calls it away from you at $180. So you have a $15 a share profits times 100 shares, $1,500. I mean, that's still really good on a $630 investment, but not quite as good as the first scenario. So that's the way these contracts work. Now, if it finishes anywhere between $165 and $180, you would still, you know, possibly make money. Maybe not, though. I'll give you an example. Say it closes at $170. Well, nobody's going to call it away from you at $180. However, you buy it at $165, sell at $170, you get $500 back. You still lose $130. But it depends if it's in the middle where it is versus how much you paid for it. But anyway, so hopefully that wasn't too confusing. But that's again how call debit option are called. They're called the call debit spreads. So that's how those work. So anyway, on the next session, I will talk about call credit spreads. Okay, so I'm going to wrap it up for today. Hope everyone's doing well. Again, Bill Thompson, T-Bill. Talk to everybody again soon. Take care. See ya.